job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, July 11th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, another crazy day in the markets. And, of course, I believe many of Wall Street are returning from last week's July 4th weekend, so maybe that's why we're seeing such positive numbers. But there are some reports we can go over. Let's first do the gold report. We have gold down $11 today at $1,355. We have silver still up a penny at 20.37. Platinum was up 4 at 1104. And we have palladium up 7 at 628. The USDX today was slightly higher, 0.25 at 96.53. Crude oil was down 93 at 44.48. And the paper markets today, the Dow was up 80 points at 18,226. The NASDAQ was up 31 points at 49.88. The S&P was up 7 at 21.37. 10-year yield, that popped a little bit, 0.07 at 1.43%. There's no more worries about what's going on in the world. It's just really kind of funny. Euro is 111 up 0.05. And, of course, the stimulus is, again, being injected into Japan. So that was up almost 4% overnight. And what's interesting, Al, about Japan, and I don't know if you can remember to ask Corbett to come this Thursday. But I saw where the Prime Minister of Japan, they want to rewrite their constitution. I don't know if you've talked to them about this previously. And I find that interesting because it will be the first time there's been changes since, you know, after the war, shortly after the war. And he's still pumping in all kinds of stimulus. So I'd kind of be interested to hear what his comments might not mean anything at all.
You know what the major point is, so far as I know, in changing the Japanese.
They're breaking away from the U.S.
Well, not exactly.
Well, the U.S. is a big part of that, but what?
Well, the point is, the U.S. is perhaps telling, look, we can't continue. We can't afford to continue providing your defense.
Yep.
Japan guaranteed, they signed a constitution that essentially said they would be a pacifist nation, and they would not be involved in, their military would be minimized. Well, now they're getting to a point where they've got China next door.
That's right.
And the United States is losing its capacity to, they don't think they can rely on us to defend them. And the United States may have told them, look, we can't afford this anymore. So they have to change their constitution in order to generate a more militaristic government.
Mm-hmm. So I found that interesting. So I'd like to hear his comments on, you know, has it changed the you know, what do they think inside and so forth. But there's a lot of stuff going on in those seas over there in the South China Sea. So,
you know, it's kind of interesting, and this is something I intend to ask James about, Corbett, when I talk to him for this next week or this week for the interview. You know, we sit back from this side and we have been essentially taught and conditioned to think of China as this massive, you know, population, billion people and the rest of that sort of thing, and it's a monster. And little Japan sits off to the side as if, and you kind of think of it subjectively as, you think of Japan as being, well, relatively weak. But the truth is, Japan was the number two economy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now China's the number two economy and Japan is number three, but it is number three. I mean, it's not, the point I'm trying to make is, if push came to shove between Japan and China, it's not an automatic that China's going to just steamroll over Japan, particularly if Japan gets its hands on any nuclear weapons. All right. Under those circumstances, I think China is stymied in terms of just, it isn't going to be able to easily bully Japan, and it may be that's what Japan wants right now. But none, my point, nevertheless, is number two economy versus number three economy. This is really a toss-up. Push comes to shove. It's not, Japan's not the weak sister on this. So I'll talk to James about it and see what his opinion is on that when I interview him this week.
But I did find that, yeah. And again, that's all part of having that constitution rewritten. And, yeah, I think it's a big deal, you know, to... And we have all these, you know, trade agreements and so forth. So it's like you see all these changes that are going to be happening in the very near future. And there was, well, let's talk to the changes to the markets today. Yeah, the S&P rallied, you know, surpassing the previous all-time record set back in May of 2015. And, of course, you know, everyone is still cheering that blockbuster June jobs report. If you believe it, obviously the markets did, at least for 2 days. And so you had the Dow soaring those high points on Friday. The Dow is about 100 points away from its all-time high. The NASDAQ is still about 5% away from its all-time high. And but, you know, you've got the earnings that are about to begin. And for the markets to go any higher, and I don't think you're going to have good earnings coming out, particularly because of the, you know, the strength in the dollar. And so, you know, that's if you're following the markets.
Well, it depends.
So forth.
It depends, Melody. You know, we got this Orson Welles effect going on here. It's kind of like, you know what? I think Orson Welles, he's the one who taught government how to falsify your information and broadcast it over the radio when he did, what was it, the invasion from Mars. I can't remember the title of the H.G. Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that, and people were, oh, my God, the whole country was panicking because Orson Welles was doing this fictional report. And I think the politicians must have sat back and said, holy cow. Orson Welles can do that talking about space aliens. What can we do with economic numbers? So in any case, we've got the Orson Welles effect going on here. And I mean, my God, have we really gone from, 16,000 jobs?
Well, I'll tell you what.
280,000 in 1 month.
H.G. Wells wrote some fascinating books, and I didn't know he was writing, in the mid-teens. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a lot about wars, and he wrote a book about, these explosions that'll take place that will be blue and so forth. And basically, a lot of his writings was really teamed to the atomic bomb and the naming and so forth. I mean, he was writing all about this back in 19, I think it was 14. And I had no idea that he wrote books. I was one that I hadn't heard of, and the guy is really fascinating.
Well, not only that, when you read some of his work, it's like, and Brave New World is another one by Aldous Huxley. These people were at the foundation of what we now call the New World Order. They understood what was wanted. I don't know that Huxley was a contributor exactly to the New World Order idea, but he certainly understood about it. And Wells, I think he was one of the proponents for the New World Order. I don't mean one of two or three, one of 50 or 100, I'm not sure. But this, what we talk about today is the New World Order. This was being laid, the foundation for this was being laid a century ago in England and presumably the United States, but I think England was the center of it at the time, and now the United States is.
And, it's interesting because I was just reading a book. It's The Girls of Atomic City. It's about the women who helped win World War II, about them, putting together the bomb and so forth. And they mention H.G. Wells. That's what led me. But also Bohemian Grove was into play. The Bohemian Grove, that group helped, was involved. And it's like, I didn't know
involved
that.
Involved in what? Involved
it was in, well, I don't want to go into the book today as far as, how these women and, in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, a lot of that property, but the Bohemian Grove participants, they were all members of the Bohemian Grove, helped bring a lot of that land to the government so that they could, complete the Manhattan Project. So
you're talking about down in Oak Ridge, Tennessee?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So, it was interesting because, we've all seen the videos of Bohemian Grove, but this is deep. I mean, these connections and these roots are deep. And, the more you read and I never, when I was, I'm in a book club and this was one of the books and I didn't think I'd be reading about H.G. Wells and the Bohemian Grove in this book. But, then you do a little more investigation and so.
You can read about all kinds of crazy things.
The connections is it's fascinating because we think about the New World Order, the depth of it, if you believe in the spiritual battle, this is the evil side of it. And their patience. We have a hard time today understanding what we know. How can it continue? But yet, when you look at the time, they're very patient. They plant the seeds. They grow.
And that's part of the reason why I look at this as spiritual warfare. Because if you just take your rank and file gangster, all right, who wants world power and the rest of that sort of thing, he's just in it for the money and the women and whatever, a newer car, newer faster car, and the rest of that. He's just worried about himself. He doesn't set forth a movement that can last for centuries, certainly not for generations. Whatever's going on here with this New World Order, they are motivated by something that lasts over time. It's not just ordinary greed and ordinary ambition. This is something else, a motivation that lasts over time. And from my perspective, it has to be something spiritual because nothing else really stands up. We talked a little about this on Friday. We're talking about the idea that people need to pay attention to history. You really do need to understand history so you can connect the dots. If you look back and you see this is what H.G. Wells was talking about a century ago, and then you look at what they're talking about today and you connect those two dots, you get a line that tells you where we're likely to be headed. You know, where are we going to be a year from now, a decade from now, 20 years from now? Where are we going to be? You can anticipate that if you have some sense of history. On the other hand, if you have no sense of history and everything is just happening now, and you don't see it in the context, the larger context of the past century, the past thousand years, whatever, if you can't see those things, and none of us see them perfectly, I certainly don't, but to the extent that you can, you can anticipate what's coming your way.
And you know what's interesting, though, too, Al? The books written 100 years ago, 80 years ago. I mean, today, people write books. They're a dime a dozen. You know, they slap in their opinions. You know, they write, you know, 100, 200 pages, you know, and you know, everybody says the same thing. There's really, truly no great insight to any of these books. Again, they're a dime a dozen. 100 years from now, there might be one or two that will look at H.G. Wells and think, well, you know, maybe they had something, you know, that was important. But
everybody's a writer today. Mark.
Everybody's a writer today. Like I said, you can write
to
your
the
opinion.
Internet, we all have blogs and we all have websites.
Spell check and
all expressing our opinions. And
but my point everybody's was the books that were written then compared to now, they meant. I mean, there was incredible information and knowledge in those books because they were true insiders, and books weren't a dime a dozen.
You know, the books that are worth something today are not the kind of books that we were used to seeing historically. The books that really will stand the test of time, or perhaps stand the test of time, maybe they're the books on technology. When you come up with books that explain the architecture for computers, for example, the architecture for the internet, how people hack into computers, there's all sorts of extraordinary things that are happening in technology, and they're not happening in philosophy per se. They're not happening in politics per se. We have people that are pushing and shoving and maybe getting more violent, but there's not new ideas I'm aware of in politics. All right? Not new ideas that at least I'm aware of in philosophy, but there are some extraordinary ideas that are taking place in physics and maybe mathematics, and maybe that's where the books that are going to stand the test of time, they're going to look back to the year 2016, they say, oh, look at that. There's a book on computers, or there's a book on mathematics or something. It certainly won't be a romance novel. We're not going to see the world succumb to the romance novels that were written in 2016, or at least I don't think we will.
Before the end of the program, I just want to get to this little report about U.S. consumer borrowing that picked up in May. More student loans, more auto loans, and these reports just kind of crack me up. But the important part of this is outstanding consumer credit, it's a measure of non-mortgage debt, rose by seasonally adjusted $8.56 billion in May from the prior month. The Federal Reserve, this report actually came out on Friday. The 6.18% seasonally adjusted annual growth rate is an acceleration from April. Which was 4.48, so it's like, wow, you know, consumer spending is up 2%. However, it was slower than March's high for the year, which was 9.92, almost 10%. So there you have a 4% reduction since March. So
that never would have affected Orson Welles, Melody. Against the March, and the Martians are landing.
They giveth and they taketh, you know. But, you know, most people don't even go any further than looking at the headline that it shows increased at 6.8%. Oh, you know, that's why the stock markets are high. But there is a warning coming out with the lenders and credit rating firms about the quality of debt on the credit cards, loans, and student loans. It's weakening. The largest U.S. issuer of retail store credit cards increased its forecast for credit losses over the next year, saying some customers were failing to catch up on overdue payments. So again, you know, here we go down the same path again. They want today and they have no money, so they'll go out and spend, and
And the government will celebrate so long as you're creating more debt instruments. But the problem is this is the same thing that triggered the Great Recession of 2008. People got into subprime debt. The subprime mortgages were included in the collateralized debt obligations. Those bonds, when they couldn't pay on the mortgages, the bonds collapsed, and we nearly had a global depression. We'll talk more about that
in a moment. Let me just throw this in, then we can go into a different topic. For credit cards, what?
We'll go into commercials.
For credit cards, it was the highest level since mid-2009.
What was the highest level? The number of
credit cards. Revolving credit outstanding.
Okay.
So again, we're back to the recession.
That means we're taking a break, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
We're going to continue with a special from Friday. 20 on American Silver Eagles, dated 2016. A 1/2 ounce American Gold Eagle and a free silver eagle. So basically, you're getting 21 ounces of silver and a 1/2 ounce American Gold Eagle. It includes all your shipping costs and insurance for $1,225. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. China.
Oh, go ahead. Excuse me.
What were you going to say?
Nothing.
Okay.
I wasn't going to say anything at all.
Well, I find that hard. I find that hard to believe, Al. I just want to do the China is hosting the G20 this year for the first time since it became a summit level forum. You have finance ministers that met this weekend, I believe, and central bankers. The finance ministers and central bankers are going to meet July 23rd and 24th in China. This weekend, you had trade ministers that met. And, you know, they're coming out with a warning that about the world's global economy is going to be about 15% sluggish. The trade is going to be sluggish for this next year. So they're looking at the global economic situation as grim. And certainly the major economies are having the big problems. They're encouraging more stimulus. And and I think if they come out and say that there's suggesting a 15% decline, I would have to equate that to probably of a 30% decline, because they're going to be on the softer side of things. And the G20 opposes protectionism and supports establishing new investment principles. Well, of course they oppose it, protectionism. You can't have global markets and a global economy.
Which means they are owned and operated by the globalist corporations who want to be able to sell their stuff wherever they can and build it wherever they can. And the result is they'll just impoverish people. That's what's really going to happen.
But they did mention structural problems, and that's what we talk often on this program, is it's the structural problems of these economies that, you know, you can throw as much money to them as you want.
You know what I think they mean when they say structural problems?
What's that, Al?
I think they're telling us there's something's going on here and we don't have enough power
to fix it.
Yeah, we'll say this is a structural problem. See, it's not the fault of the government.
It's not us.
Globalists or whatever. This is structural. See?
But they do have...
I think it's revealing. I think it indicates that they're in over their head, at least in some regards, and they're saying, I don't know what to do. You know, we can't handle it. Not my fault.
So I thought that was interesting. We'll have to see if anything comes out of the G20 meeting come July 23rd and 24th. Highly unlikely, but...
Gives them a chance to get out of the house, you know?
Yeah.
Get out of the office, take a trip to China.
Yeah.
What the heck? Eat some dog, cat.
It's the last place on earth I'd want to... But anyway, next.
We've got an article here from CNBC entitled Goldman Sachs. Neither stocks nor bonds look good right now. Now, this is an interesting article because we have the markets hitting record highs or approaching record highs.
They're way overpriced.
Okay. And here's Goldman Sachs and say, no, wait a second. Don't get too excited about this. They say both stocks and bonds looked expensive after rallying together and were now vulnerable to a quick sell-off, Goldman Sachs said. The market had increasingly treated the risks from the UK vote to the Brexit vote to exit from the European Union as a negative local economic growth shock affecting mainly Britain and Europe, but one that is likely to drive global central banks to ease further, according to Global Goldman. Bonds could sell off sharply as a result of central bank disappointment, positive inflation, and data surprises and or illiquidity. But their point is, look, bonds are, look, they could be, you could be, if you want to invest in bonds, could take a loss pretty quick. At the same time, they go on, they say, at the same time, equities could sell off owing to negative growth surprises, and with yields at all-time lows, bonds are unlikely to be good hedges. This leads to a lack of diversification and higher portfolio risk at a time when return potential is already limited. You can't get much on your investment, all right? Percent or two if you're lucky. This was one of the reasons for the investment banks to go overweight cash, meaning they're not going to invest in stocks, they're not going to invest in bonds, they're going to stack up dollar bills in the vault. That's essentially what they're saying in its allocation views, recommending that investors hold a diversified portfolio of currencies. Now, I look at that. You know, Goldman Sachs, I don't know what they're talking about, but they're talking about fiat currencies. All right? Confederate dollars are a fiat currency. I don't know if they're recommending that my diversified portfolio of fiat currencies include fiat Confederate dollars. But in a lot of respects, what's the difference between Confederate money and U.S. dollars or euros or whatever other fiat currency you want to point to? They're all headed in the same direction. And then the punchline. Goldman Sachs also advised holding some gold to reduce portfolio risk. That just struck me as surprising. One of the things that I did not, I just didn't expect to see this, where Goldman Sachs was coming out. They were kind of an enemy of gold. They're people who sell stocks. They sell bonds. They're saying, no, stay away from stocks and bonds. But you could get some gold to reduce portfolio risk. Well, I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely. That tells me that Goldman Sachs customers are requesting gold.
Probably so.
So they now want
to. It's an idea whose time has come.
And unfortunately, what they'll do is they'll slam them in GLD. They'll slam them into the ETFs instead of physical gold. So,
they didn't say physical gold in the article, but I think that's. Regardless, I don't care if they say physical gold.
Well, I'm just saying gold. That's what they'll
People
do.
People will learn. Buy paper gold, you're going to learn that you want physical gold before this is over.
But, I mean, that's what they, to me, that's why the ETFs were created, so Wall Street would have gold to sell that they could make some money on and control it. You know, they got tired of their customers pulling out money and putting into mining shares and gold. People want to know why, you know, sometimes gold in the mining shares have a hard time getting off the bottom. And I think that's because we had look how many billions of dollars are in the GLD. It watered down the other two markets. It watered down the coin market and it watered down the mining shares. So, but that's why those, you know, my view, they were created. They help manipulate the price. It helps control money. They get to control it. They still make commissions on it. Wall Street is greedy. They don't want you to hold physical gold and not trade with them anymore so they can make a profit. And that's what it's all about, folks. They're not concerned about, you know, they have to, you know, make sure you have some sort of return every now and then just so you stay with them. But for the most part, they really don't care. It's all about, you know, how much they can make and, you know, make sure that they keep those markets flowing along with the U.S. government and every other central bank in the world.
Did you ever see the movie The Big Short?
No.
You really ought to, and as it turns out, it's available on the internet right now. I doubt if it's going to be available for long because it's a 2015 movie, and somebody apparently pirated it and stuck it up on the internet. You can find it on YouTube, The Big Short. It's 2.5 hours anyway, maybe close to 3, I don't recall clearly. But it's really a wonderful, wonderful motion picture. Great film, in my opinion. It's not for everybody. A lot of people aren't going to understand it. There'll be there's no car chases, nobody getting shot, and rest of this sort of thing. It's just the story of what happened back around 2006, 2007, 2008, when we got into the Great Recession, and it explains. It's a very educational film. It explains the relationship between the subprime mortgages and the collateralized debt obligations, the bonds that were backed by these mortgages, and how one thing led to another. And what's really amazing is it explains how stupid everybody was on Wall Street. A handful of people realized what was going on, and what was happening is they started selling these collateralized mortgage bonds, these bonds that were composed of, who knows, the bond might be composed of 1,000 mortgages. Right? I don't know what the numbers are. And when they first started out with that, all of those mortgages were basically AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And therefore, the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligations, these bonds, they were AAA. But over time, these things became established, and the big banks started hiding. They had some bad mortgages. They had subprime mortgages. They said, we can just bury them in these things. We bury them in the CDOs. Nobody reads them. They got 1,000 different mortgages in there. Who reads them? Well, one guy finally did. And he realized, and he was a bit of an oddball, but he read through all these mortgages, and he realized, my God, most of these things are subprime. These things are not triple A rated bonds. And therefore, he decided to short the CDOs, and one thing led to another, and we had the problem. But he could see that they were bad. They were being sold by everybody who was making a fabulous amount of money, and no one knew what they were selling. It was a little bit like the tulip mania in the Dutch experience back in the 1600s. They went nuts. They were selling single bulbs. Tulip bulbs were selling for enough money to buy a new home. Whole thing was crazy. This was the same thing with the CDOs. They were selling packages that no one looked inside to see what's in there. And everybody just kept on selling and selling and selling. Well, in any case, the big short. For those of you that are, you know, if you're interested, you can find the movie on YouTube right now. You do go to YouTube, search The Big Short, and it was there at least as of last night, and I saw it, and I don't know how long it's going to stick around, but I recommend, if you haven't seen it, it's really an educational film. It really gives you an insight how mismanaged these markets really are. It's not just a bunch of villains up there that are calculating how to destroy the world or take over the world or steal all your money. It's mainly a bunch of idiots, right? Strutting around in expensive suits and telling everybody how smart they are when they don't even know what they're selling. So, good movie, The Big Short. Folks get an opportunity, take a look.
It has. It was on demand, Infinity Demand, Comcast. Yeah. Been wanting to watch it, just haven't had a chance to. But just one more recap on about the stocks. You have the S&P 500. That's trading at over 17 times forward earnings estimates. And that's the highest levels of the past 7 years. So, again, we're going right back, you know, to the
recession.
What's that
telling you? One of the implications is if the stocks are at the highest level they've been, it means you got to ask yourself, does that mean they're going higher? A lot of people are
going
to say, oh, yeah. Or does it mean they're in for a significant correction? And I can't tell you what the answer to that question is, but more than likely we're headed for a correction rather than a new bull market that's going to take us to 19,000 and 20,000 above on the Dow Jones. We're likely to see, I don't know, who knows, 13,000, 10,000. We'll probably see 10,000 on the Dow Jones before we see 20,000.
And the Dow and gold will cross. I can remember getting into the business, gold prices and the Dow Jones would cross at 3,000. Well, that's been upped.
I think so, too.
It'd be between 5,000 and I think 10,000. I think you're going to see the Dow drop to 10 from this level. I think you'll see the Dow drop to 10. Could go lower, but definitely you'll see gold and Dow cross, I believe, at 10. So
let's hope the good Lord's paying attention to you, Melody, and let's hope that happens.
Well, I pay attention to him, so I certainly do.
All right, we are caught in the midst of a serious radio problem here.
I know we have a minute.
55 seconds.
Well, Janet Yellen, I think we talked about this not too long ago. She also warned about how pricey stocks were. And so, you know, you hear comments about 20,000, the Dow will get there, and there's much greater potential of it dropping than it going higher. And if it reaches that level, so be it. It only makes the drop a lot harder for a lot of people. It'll be far more devastating, so it'll drop.
Now the lesson in all of this, again, Goldman Sachs is advocating that people buy gold. All right, that was something like pulling teeth, I would imagine, for Goldman Sachs. That would be an argument that they should have made, who knows, 6 months, a year, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't know.
From day one, everybody should have some gold in their portfolio.
I understand.
It's just
but
they
insofar
need to have more now.
They've been forced to do it. It just indicates the times are perilous, and gold is a good hedge against that peril. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adesky with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Who's our guest tomorrow, Melody?
Well, tomorrow is Doug Noland. He was in the market for 25 years, and he really has some great commentary that he writes. You can go to his website at creditbubblebulletin.com. That's creditbubblebulletin.com. And he will be our guest tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to it. And I just want to encourage all the listeners to make sure they tune in.
Okay. What's next?
It's up to you, Al.
All right, we've got an article here from CNBC. This is just builds on another point. We already talked about Goldman Sachs recommending you buy some gold. Here's an article from CNBC, To Infinity and Beyond, Why a Trader Argues Gold Has Unlimited Upside. That's the headline. Gold just posted its longest weekly winning streak since July 2011. But if investors missed out on the recent rally, fear not. One trader says the commodity has unlimited upside, and investors have the Federal Reserve to thank for it. His argument is essentially that because the Federal Reserve has not raised interest rates, but they seem to be just dilly-dallying around, it's one of the reasons that the price of gold is going up. It says gold prices have rallied 28% so far in 2016, hitting a two-year high earlier this last week. This guy's name is Colvin, Tom Colvin. He has bullish expectations for bullion. His near-term target for precious metal is $1,400. That doesn't strike me as anything astonishing. We're at $1,350 right now or thereabouts. I don't see that $1,400 is such an astonishing prediction. But gold has not been above that level in 3 years, which is, blah, blah, blah. By recovering from what was a difficult time, a difficult correction in the gold market. The market can take good news and bad news, Colvin said. A confused Federal Reserve, however, saying one thing but doing another over and over invites buyers of gold to jump into the pool with both feet, and they have. Furthermore, most of Colvin says a top-heavy equity market. The Standard & Poor's 500 is within a hair of its all-time high. Should continue to invite investors to buy gold as a hedge, and that's as a hedge against the possibility of a significant correction in the equities market and maybe even in the bond market. So we'll watch and see. But again, this is another one of those leaves in the breeze that's telling us that maybe gold has finally become an idea whose time has come, right? And CNBC is talking about it, Goldman Sachs is talking about it. You know, it may be finally, you know, where public sentiment and a trend is building and a momentum is building that may not be easily diminished in the near future. It's just one more, it's not proof, but it's one more evidence that wouldn't be a bad idea to get some gold. What else, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to bring up a little bit about Britain. They have the next prime minister. It's going to be the Home Secretary, Theresa May. Her last rival unexpectedly dropped out of the race on Monday. So another one that unexpectedly dropped out that was that supported the exit. Theresa May supported the Remain. Cameron is set to speak with the Queen on Wednesday and offer his resignation. So this all should take effect this week. She's 59 years old. She'll become the second female prime minister after Margaret Thatcher. And, you know, it's interesting because we've had so many of those that were leading to replace Cameron were for the exit, and they all suddenly just pulled out of the race. Now you have someone that was in the Remain campaign, and she's replacing Cameron. So it's kind of like, what is really changing to that country? It's going to, you know, it's 43 years of political and economic ties to the European Union, and but yet still the political views or the politician is sort of along the same path. So,
well, what's interesting about it is if you have a new prime minister that favored Remain.
Yes.
The one that's going, he also favored Remain, but regardless, Brexit has been voted on, it's been voted for, it's been approved by the people, and it's interesting that they don't put someone in as prime minister who is in favor of Brexit.
It's a fundamental reality.
They ought to be doing that right now, or you would think that. Instead,
and every one of
does
them
it mean they're going to back out? Are they going to back out of Brexit?
They did. Well, I don't think they'll back out of Brexit, but I do believe those that were that supported the key leaders that were for Brexit, they all backed out unexpectedly. And that's what I was saying all along. It's like, well, how does that work? I mean, here you had Boris Johnson. He was the shoo-in. Well, he quit unexpectedly. There was three or four of them, and they backed out unexpectedly. Today, the other woman, Miss Leadsom, she backed the Brexit campaign, and now she's backing out unexpectedly. So it's interesting to see how many unexpectedly ones that have dropped out. So, yeah, and you're right, Al. It's, you know, where is the change? Now, of course, this new lady, she said that she's going to respect the will of the voters and do what the voters want them to do, but you know.
Yeah, but you know what?
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to do what the vote, whatever the
vote. Yeah,
voters
whatever the
say,
voters,
you know
what we're going to do.
But
yeah.
If the voters change their minds 6 months from now, and if we can create circumstances to cause the voters to have second thoughts, are we going to respect their new and improved opinion 6 months from now if they say, no, wait a second, let's remain? You know, who knows? It's one of those things, you look at it, and I'm so used to not believing anything politicians say that if someone tells me it's noon and the sun is up high in the sky, if it's a politician, I'm just naturally going to say, oh, that's almost certainly a bunch of crapola, even though maybe it's true. You get so cynical about some of this stuff, and you can't help it because we get fed a steady diet of lies on lies on lies. And you become cynical, jaded, skeptical, wary, sensible, objective, all right, realistic, Oh, they're talking. They're lying to us again, Melody. How many jobs did they create?
But anyway, I think that's interesting. And so we'll see. And, you know, whether they actually leave or not remains to be seen. But
yeah, maybe the world comes to an end before they have time to leave. It would be a shame after all this fuss. You know, the thing about Brexit, as one person pointed out, everybody is all excited about Brexit. All that's actually happened is some people took a vote and 52% favored leaving. And in theory, it's going to take 2 years to negotiate the departure. Nothing has happened, and yet the world is going nuts. I'm talking about Brexit, 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 Brexit. It's caused this, it's caused that. Some people are grateful, some people are angry about it. All they did, this is equivalent to something like a grandiose telephone poll. It took off. Well, sir, are you in favor of leaving or staying within the European Union? Ma'am, are you in favor? They do a poll, get 52 to 48%. Now what? Shall the world fall apart? And yet that's, in some regards, that's what seems to be happening. We're having a very strange and what strikes me as an overreaction to Brexit.
I don't think it's the reaction. It could be an overreaction, but I still believe that this is a very big deal. I mean, you're changing something different over 43 years. And when we know that the whole world is basically being glued together by confidence, that has a lot to do with confidence and with their economic ties to the European Union. So I do believe, I mean, they were never connected from the euro. But 43 years is a long time. And so I do believe there is impacts. And I do believe that a lot of these other countries, and I think they will look back as saying that this, that the Brexit really was the unraveling of maybe just Europe, maybe just of Europe. Now, I don't think that is happening today. I don't think you're going to see the big impacts tomorrow. I don't think you're going to see the big impacts next week. But I do believe in the very near future, you're going to see the impact of Brexit. And I think it is a big deal. I think it's a big deal that the people voted, and you're going to see that momentum travel around the world.
Oh, it's moving around the world. There's what's happening. It's not because of Brexit, in my opinion. Again, I just look at this. I see this as the canary in the coal mine. Right. It's signaling, and they're saying, oh, my God, the canary is going to finish us all off. We're going to be hunted down by the canary, and it'll kill us all. No, it won't. It's just a little canary. A canary keeled over, and everybody's panicking because the canary keeled over, but the canary didn't cause the gas in the coal mine, and it didn't cause the miners to run like heck to get out of the coal mine.
Well,
just a little signal. It's an indicator at most of a sentiment that's perhaps building around the world.
Well, I think you're having that sentiment that's building around the world, but I also believe that this is the straw that broke the camel's back. When you look at the condition of the other European nations, when you look at what's happening at Italy, even their prime minister came out and said, hey, yeah, we're in really bad shape. Our banks are failing, but we're not even half as bad as what the derivative markets are over here. I mean, that's what you have to be scared about. And again, it's all being glued together by that confidence. You can separate the two and look at it as a movement of the people and so forth, but you can also look at it as the financial, their systems, their financial systems. I mean, if they're ready to, you know, they're ready to collapse as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, again,
you know,
this is
you
a
might
function
be able to look
of fiat
at,
currency.
I think you have to look, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And Brexit has given us a glimpse of what may be a kind of global awareness that something is wrong. There's a problem with globalism. You know, globalism works fine as long as everybody's making money. But nobody wants globalism when we are in or near something like an economic depression. And although that may not be apparent in the war in the United States, it is in the world. If you can believe the Baltic Dry Index, again, it's fallen. The index has fallen from 12,000 a couple of years ago to below 500. When Melody was talking earlier about one of the people, one of the analysts talking about the economy, and they thought it was going to be sluggish for a while.
G20.
If the global or excuse me, if the Baltic Dry Index is any indication, you could double the amount of global traffic that's to cargo, movement of double the amount of cargo that's being moved globally right now in ships, and it still wouldn't make a significant difference. This is going to be, you could increase it by a factor of 10 from 500 to 5 to, from 500, well, not to, yeah, to 5,000. And you'd still be only be less than half of what it was back a few years ago. It is sluggish. It is slow. Global economy, if you can believe the Baltic Dry Index, we are in a depression on a global basis. What are they going to do about it? Anybody got a solution? And it seems almost certain that although the United States has not yet succumbed in an obvious way to that global depression, seems almost certain that we're going to. I don't see how we're going to beat it. We may be the last one to fall into that hole, but you can. It seems highly likely that that's where we're headed. So we'll watch and see. But it is not a time to sit back and simply say, oh, yeah, happy days are here again. No, they are probably not.
Can you imagine? You have Angela Merkel. You have this woman in Britain. And what if Hillary gets elected?
You know, one of the things I had women years ago. Yeah.
And it's like, oh my.
You know when they elect women to run
happen.
The country, Melody?
Pardon?
You know when they typically elect women to run the country? It's when they're so deep, they have screwed things up so badly, the men finally say, "Ah, let a woman try it. I don't know, she can't make it much worse." You know, that's when they give women a shot at this. But if it's running right, the men keep control. Well, when it's failing, that's when women are able to step up. If that were true.
We're in there to save the day.
Yeah, well.
We're in there to save the day. Dirty
job,
comes.
But somebody's got to do it. Yeah.
Here she comes to save the day.
Mighty
anyway.
Mouse. Yeah. Minnie Mouse, Mighty Mouse, Mighty Minnie Mouse. Where are we? We got 30 seconds to go, Melody.
800-375-4188 for our special today, $1,225 for a half-ounce American Gold Eagle and 20 American Silver Eagles, a free Silver Eagle, all your insurance and shipping for $1,225. 800-375-4188.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. I hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams.